Today on Movie Wild, as we review It Chapter 2 and Brittany Runs a Marathon. For Movie Wallahs, hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Rashmi.
Yes, G as well.
Movie Wallahs is your weekly list of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. Greeting.
Hello.
Here we are again.
Indeed, yes. We are recording back-to-back podcasts today in this sweltering heat. Are you getting enough air, by the way, Yazdi?
Yes,
I'm good.
Or is Joe sucking it out the room? That's what he meant to say.
No, I set up a fan under the table.
Yes.
And I'm kind of enjoying the breeze.
It's yes. Like, yes. Are you in shorts?
I am in shorts.
Oh, no see, wonder you're no enjoying wonder, it.
Yeah, I'm wearing jeans.
So I'm wearing leggings.
Well, I'm not feeling the bottom comfort at all.
Are you not getting
Would you
any
like
breeze?
A pair of shorts?
Yeah, I would love to remove my pants. That's the good thing about doing a podcast.
We're all Nobody friends here. Know. There's no video.
Please don't.
Okay, fine.
That's pretty creepy, actually, yes.
That would be a little creepy.
Yeah, it's hot. It's hot season.
There might be an odd lungi lying around.
Well, I can do a lungi.
Which is like a sarong.
I can say a lungi is a male
Maintaining
sarong.
Our India theme.
Yes.
But we have big news. To share do. With our listeners.
Oh, yes.
Yes, if you like hearing Yazdi, then you can hear more of Yazdi as he joins the amazing Beth Accomando on KPBS, NPR,
once a
in
month.
San Diego, yes. Once a month. And you guys will be doing...
It's going to be a midday movie segment, which will be about 10 minutes once a month. And we're going to be talking about recently released movies, film festivals, anything related to movies. So I'm very, very privileged, happy to represent Movie Wallahs.
Yay!
At that. And
you will hopefully whet people's appetites to come and hear more.
Yes. And to champion the little films.
Yay. Yes. So you might yes. talk about some movies that will make me groan that you'll like, but oh well.
Like Eat, Pray, Love.
Yes.
Or Notting Hill. Do you hate Notting Hill?
No, I think you used a really good word in our last podcast, which was diabetic. And I think I found Notting Hill a little bit inauthentic. But I think it's of its time, right? I think all of the movies at that time were diabetic. Like they felt that they had to almost be overprocessed. I don't know how else to describe it.
I love that movie so much.
I know you do. But I think you like it because you like the
premise.
Yes.
I think I've managed to avoid it. It's never appealed yes. to me. And
the premise of the movie is Julia Roberts can show up at your door one day or in your bookstore that you own.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah.
It's of its time.
It's of its time. I don't know if we ever get a movie
Richard
like
Curtis?
That now.
Yes, it
yeah.
is.
Okay, yeah. Yeah.
We should also talk about the fact that we are stuck over here on a hot day in San Diego when we could be stuck in a hot day at Toronto.
In an air-conditioned cinema.
Where we were last year and had yes. such a good time watching movies. But we can only do so many film festivals. And so this year we are taking a break. But
yes.
Good kinds of news coming out of Toronto. All kinds of movies opening up. The movie that Rian Johnson, after he did the Star Wars movie, his new movie is called Knives Out.
Okay.
And it's got a killer cast like Daniel Craig and Chris Evans and Jamie Lee Curtis. And that movie has gotten great reviews coming out of Toronto Film Festival. The movie Hustlers, of all things, with Jennifer Lopez is getting great reviews out of it. The movie from our very own San Diego director, Daniel Cretton. Daniel Destin Cretton, called Just Mercy, has gotten very good reviews.
We're huge fans of his from movies like Short Term 12.
Short Term 12, yes.
I think The Glass House is a little bit of a misfire, but...
And then Steven Soderbergh's new movie, but...
He's back?
He's back. He's really back.
He never really went away. I think
his retirement was a sham. He kind of lied.
Got on a soapbox for a while, made a point, and then couldn't help himself. But no, I'm really glad to see him back.
I'm not complaining. Yeah.
Yeah, he's solid.
So it's a movie about the Panama Papers, and it has Meryl Streep in it. So that one's opening.
All I keep hearing a lot about Honey Boy with Shia LaBeouf again. And we talked about Shia LaBeouf in our last podcast with the Peanut Butter Falcon. And I keep hearing a lot about Honey Boy as well.
It's supposed to be great, and it's loosely based on Shia LaBeouf's own life.
Okay.
And it's got Lucas Hedges, and who's always great. And yeah. So many good movies. It's that
Pain
time
and
of the
Glory,
year.
I keep hearing about. Yes. Adam Driver as another one I keep hearing about.
Yeah, it's called The Report, the one with Adam Driver. Adam Driver is everywhere this year.
He's been everywhere for a couple of years. I think he's capitalized on his Darth Vader, not Darth Vader, his
Kylo Ren
fame. But why shouldn't he? He's a terrific actor, and he shouldn't be known just for that role.
And last year he was nominated for,
What I'm having it? Amnesia.
Yeah. Last year was nominated for something, and I wonder what he'll be nominated for this year. Last year was nominated for...
Well, it was Patterson?
For the one about...
Say words.
Denzel Washington's son is in the movie. The Spike Lee movie.
Oh, yes. Yeah,
the Black Klansman.
Yes. Last year he was nominated
for that. That's right.
Correct. Yeah. And of course, Venice just finished. We were just talking before our last podcast about the fact that the Joker won
the top prize.
The prize at Venice.
The Joker.
That's also screening at TIFF as well.
Correct.
So, you know, that's one that I've been quietly excited about since I saw the trailer much earlier in the year. Apparently, they're talking about, you know, it's a performance worthy of an Oscar from Joaquin Phoenix here. And
he's always good. Have we ever seen him not be good in a movie?
He is, but
he's too good for me usually. Yeah, he just overdoes it sometimes. Yeah. But yes. He's very committed. If you've seen the trailers, he looks like he's lost.
Yeah.
So much weight.
It looks like a wonderful kind of origin story for a character like the Joker, which famously Christopher Nolan refused to have an origin story for Heath Ledger's iteration. So this is kind of cool that we get to see a movie just about that.
So. And speaking of controversy, Woody Allen's new movie has been releasing in Europe, the one with Timothée Chalamet and Saoirse Ronan.
I thought it had Lily Depp, wasn't it?
Lily Depp, whatever. Yeah. It was also in it. Amazon pulled it. It was going to be released in the US as well, but now finally they found distributors who might be releasing it in the US as well, regardless of how you feel about
and
Woody
what's
Allen.
The controversy? I mean, he is controversial,
It's the age old Me Too, perhaps.
Because his daughter, Dylan
Farrow.
Okay, so it's not the material that's controversial.
No, it's the same old.
Yeah. Dodgy Woody.
So, all kinds of movies, and of course, our very own Greta Gerwig. Has her new movie coming out after Lady Bird. It's releasing on Christmas Day, and it's her adaptation and it's her adaptation of Little Women. And it has Saoirse Ronan, again, Timothée Chalamet. It has the girl from Midsommar, Florence Pugh. It has Meryl Streep. It has Laura Dern. So all kinds of goodies coming our way.
Wow. Terrific stuff. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah. I'm sad that we're not at TIFF this year, but I guess
too many movies, too little time.
There was life events that prevented us getting there this time. So we'll hopefully see you again next year, TIFF.
Yes.
And if you have the opportunity to, like, we always do our film festival podcasts, and we are huge advocates for going to film festivals. So if you can get yourself there by hook or by crook, do so. Yeah, because we're not there doesn't mean you have to miss out.
Yes. And I forgot our dear Taika Waititi's new movie called Jojo Rabbit.
I know. I can't wait.
With Scarlett Johansson and him.
I love that man.
Yeah, he can do no wrong. Anyway, so many movies.
Speaking of which, we have time this podcast to give you a streaming VOD pick in our segment, I can't find anything to watch on VOD. And we do this because there's too many movies, too little time on all sorts of media platforms. Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu, there's 1,001 different services these days. So we're going to give you a couple of picks from all of the thousands of choices at your disposal. So what has it being in your list.
So we were just talking earlier in the podcast about Notting Hill and Richard Curtis. I am also recommending another Richard Curtis movie on Netflix, which is that lovely time travel movie called About Time. And I've got a feeling, Yazdi, you may have recommended this one quite recently. I'm not sure. But anyway.
It came up during one of our discussions, but it wasn't one of our picks.
Okay, so this is probably... I love time travel movies. Like, I just love them. Good or bad. I just love time travel movies. This is, I think, one of the best, sweetest. And that's weird to talk about a time travel movie being sweet, right? This is such a sweet movie. I just love this movie. I'm in love with this movie. And it's got such a great cast. Domhnall Gleeson's in it. Bill Nighy's in it. Rachel McAdams. Robbie's in here. Just lovely. It's lovely and it's funny and it's smart and it's just an unusual time travel movie.
It's great.
I was just going to say, at the risk of pissing off all kinds of people, I think the cinema screen has not seen a more beautiful smile than that of Rachel McAdams. When she smiles, everything's right with the world. And this whole screen.
You said that about me last week.
Well, you too, Rashmi, you too. But Rachel McAdams in a rom-com is
someone famous.
Okay. Yes, is as good as it gets. Anyway, and Domhnall Gleeson, he's such a chameleon. I saw him in the kitchen earlier this month.
Yeah, you were just talking about him.
And he was unrecognizable. Anyway.
And of course, he's just been in Star Wars. I mean.
Yes.
That's a great pick of a movie because I think it's, I feel like the movie missed its moment somehow.
Correct.
I don't know whether it opened against something much bigger, but this is a movie that I think should have done fantastically well. There's nothing in it that, is upsetting or offensive. It's heartfelt. It's really well crafted. And I think, you know, it has all of the ingredients from my perspective for, you know, kind of a big
summer blockbuster, right?
Well, not a blockbuster, but a kind of big secondary movie, right? You know, something else that people go see.
You know, I think its release was November 2013 when it was released. And I think anything that comes out during that time of the year just gets lost unless it's something that's going to get Oscar buzz. And it's not one of those types of movies, which is why I say I think a summer release for this one would have been much better.
For sure.
I really hope, I know we talk about this all the time, but I really hope people start getting smarter about the releases of their movies. Just because something comes out earlier in the year doesn't make it worse.
Yeah. And it actually behooves the studios to release the movie earlier in the year because there is less oxygen being sucked up by higher profile movies and they can get people's attention quicker. Mm-hmm. So why do you want to dump your stuff while,
you know,
the Tom Hanks movie and the Steven Spielberg movie and all these other movies are, you know, vying for people's attention. Yeah.
Okay. So that was mine. About Time.
Yes,
about time you give us yours.
And it's about time. So my recommendation is for a movie which came out last year and it was on Joe's list of the best movies of the year and very close. I think it was my number 15 or 16 and it's a movie called A Simple Favor.
Yay.
And it's such a good film.
I love the wardrobe.
Yes.
That's what I remember.
Blake Lively and Anna Kendrick and Blake Lively just kills it.
Joe's smiling at me because I own one of the pieces of clothing.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Several of the pieces of clothing.
Several, okay.
And it's one of these, it's impossible to describe, it's tongue-in-cheek, there's a little bit of dread in it, there's a murder mystery built in.
It's kind of naughty.
It's naughty, it's about this woman who suddenly goes missing and her best friend is trying to help her, but then she has an affair with her husband while he's also searching for his wife and there's all kinds of double, triple, quadruple crosses and... it's so much fun.
It's naughty. And I think the best thing for me about the movie is it has a performance that I feel like got overlooked as far, you know, because the movie itself is, you know, it's got this kind of comedic undertone to it. It's got drama and all. But I think Blake Lively nails her performance.
That's a difficult role.
It really is. There's a lot of things that she has to do as an actor to make that movie work. And she nails every single line. Every time she steps on screen, she steals the scene. And it's just so remarkably memorable. I mean, you know, and she's up against Anna Kendrick who can hold her own too, right? I mean, you know, the performance is so remarkable and it's so naughty and deliciously dark that, I love that movie. So yeah, great pick there as well.
Yeah, and it's directed by Paul Feig, who did like Bridesmaids and The Heat and Spy and all kinds of stuff.
And it feels different for him, right? It feels like a different type of movie coming from him. Joe, what's yours?
So again, I think I'm going to get groans all round. Not for the movie. Not for the movie. Well, I almost picked the movie called The Life of David Gale, which I really enjoyed,
but it's
a complete disaster. It was a Kevin Spacey movie from years ago about somebody who was essentially trying to make a statement about the criminal justice system. But the movie fails on many, many levels, and so I'm not going to recommend that to you necessarily. But
I think you were trying to pull a Yazdi there.
The groan is going to come from when you hear the name of the director of the movie.
Nolan.
Correct. So
really?
I'm picking a Christopher Nolan movie. This is a movie I haven't actually recommended before.
Insomnia.
Insomnia.
Oh, yeah.
Insomnia is just being released on Amazon Prime Video.
Insomnia?
With Robin Williams.
And Al Pacino.
Oh, God, did he do that?
He did. He did it a long time ago. It was a remake of actually a Swedish movie. And this was this goes back to 2002. It was his first big budget movie. It was, I think he got to do Memento. And then that was such a success that I think Warner Brothers gave him the script to... This movie with Al Pacino at the helm from an acting perspective. And it's a movie I haven't seen for a long, long time. I saw it last before I knew anything about Christopher Nolan. So it's a movie that I want to retread. And that's why, I'm recommending it because I'm going to go watch it again too. And I remember being very, very entertained by its cleverness at the time. I think the Pacino performance is something that, I certainly remember about the movie. So, it's popped up on Amazon Prime Video. Definitely going to be an add to queue. And yes, Rashmi, guess what we're doing tomorrow night?
I just felt tired. I remember just feeling tired watching it.
I really like it, and it hurts me saying that. But yeah, it's one of his underrated, because he's so celebrated now. I almost resent that. I shouldn't. He's obscenely talented. So I'll take it away. But no, I think it kind of didn't make a big splash when it came out.
It didn't, no.
I think Hilary Swank is in this movie too.
Hilary Swank, yeah. Robin Williams.
And I feel like it came out after Heat. Didn't it come out around the time of Heat?
It may have been lost in the shuffle with all of those kind of movies. And yeah, I remember it not being hugely celebrated, but I also do remember watching this. I think we were living in New Jersey at the time when it was a DVD rental. And I think I just remember what an impact it had on me. So there we go. So our three movies are...
About Time.
Yazdi.
A Simple Favor.
And I Have Insomnia. Plenty to watch on VOD. Do
I hope you don't have insomnia. Yes.
Indeed. Yes. Moving on then. So we have two movies to talk about, and I would imagine there's quite a lot to say about both. So why don't we start with It Chapter 2?
Okay.
And Rashmi, can you introduce that?
Yes, absolutely. So Andy Muschietti is back again directing the sequel to the first movie, It. Writing credits, obviously screenplay by Gary Doberman, but let's not forget this is actually based on a novel written by Stephen King. And this stars Jessica Chastain, James McAvoy, Bill Hader, Isaiah Mustafa, Jay Ryan, James Ranson, Andy Bean, and Bill Skarsgård. All of the ones before Bill Skarsgård are the adult version of the kids who basically are drawn back to the town of Derry 27 years later when it makes an appearance again. So what did you think of the sequel? So Joe, why don't you start us off this week?
So the It that was released a year or two ago by the same director worked really well for me. I was surprised, actually. And I think it was well received critically across the board. So I came into this one with some level of anticipation. I think the beauty of that movie, to me, it felt kind of like the Super 8 genre of, Steven Spielberg, Raiders of the Lost Ark, had that real kind of, family friendly, even though it was a horror film, had that kind of real, young boys on an adventure kind of feel to it. And girl. Sorry, yes. This movie Didn't have any of that. And obviously the cast has grown up, so we're not necessarily going to have the same kind of thing. But I just struggled to put this one together. I think the story elements in this came across as very confused. And it's not like the movie didn't have time to kind of go through them. The movie runs, you know, for a good solid, you know, 2.5 plus 3 hours. Almost 3 hours in length. But I found myself really puzzled as to the nature of it. I think the end of the last movie alluded to something a little deeper than was explored here. So it felt a little disjointed. It didn't really work well. The scares didn't work too well for me here either. I mean, they got me on a couple of occasions with a boo. But the sense of dread and foreboding over Pennywise and his various iterations that we experienced in that first movie, I just didn't have this time round. So, I really struggled to like this one. I didn't hate it, but I was disappointed.
Yes, Steve.
Yeah. So I'm a fan of Stephen King. I've read a couple of his books. He's a remarkably good writer. I mean, he really writes well. But you know, he's also the master of terror, master of horror. So I've kind of tried to stay away from him as well. So I kind of, I did not see the original miniseries, which came out. I think it had Tim Curry playing Pennywise.
It just replayed on TV this week. Mm. They just played all 4 episodes in a row.
Yeah. I didn't even know that there was a miniseries until I was told by Beth, actually. So I was, you know, and then Clowns Freak everybody out. So I kind of stayed away from the It movie, which got, you know, released, a couple years ago. But then when I was assured by a few people that it's not that scary, I did go ahead and see it. And like you, I was surprised at how well the movie, was able to kind of make the case that there is almost an equal amount of pain and terror for these kids by virtue of their everyday existence. And mm-hmm. It goes through some pretty dark areas, through abuse and through bullying and through, you know, being treated as an outsider and being called a loser in school and so forth. So that what they're facing with this creature who often takes a shape-shifting form of a clown is almost at par with that experience. So I kind of like, and I haven't read the book, but I understand in speaking with others that the book kind of likened that to almost a manifestation of the real horrors they were facing in the real world. And I would have loved for this movie to continue in that thread, but I almost, like you, Joseph, I saw this movie as Hollywood's attempt to kind of package this as safely as possible to bring as many butts into the seat as possible. So they were not about to take any chances, and it seemed like the movie plays more like a blockbuster, like an action movie almost. There's a lot of spectacle. Mm-hmm. And the movie is very watchable. I mean, to be honest, I thought the 2 hours had passed by the time the movie ended, and I was surprised. I was like, oh my God, it's 10 o'clock and we sat down at 7. So the movie is very engaging to watch, but it doesn't get into psychological terror. So it wasn't truly horrifying to me. It felt there was a lot of like jump scares and so forth. And so that seemed a disappointment that they've gone the route of, you know, awing people instead of truly scaring them. And then the other thing I think a lot of reviewers have mentioned is that there's a lot of plot here. All of these kids have grown up. They all have a backstory. Things have happened to them in the real world. And it's too much to put into a small movie. So I wish they had done like a miniseries on this on HBO or something to follow up with each of these. You know, I can see this being a 5 or 6 episode arc, which would have worked better, but it kind of felt really too much material.
Overstuffed.
So I agree with both of you this week. I think my overwhelming emotion is disappointment. I love the first one. Like, I love the first one. Yeah, and I hadn't seen...
I actually saw it after you were raving about it so much. Yeah.
And I hadn't seen the Tim Curry either movie or the miniseries. I think the promise of the story didn't deliver. So I'm not really saying anything new that you two have said. I did enjoy seeing the journey of the tweens becoming adults. That was fun. But you're right, that could have been a movie within itself. I feel like this one led us down a path. Well, the promise of this movie was we would understand what it was and why it existed. And instead, we just got gobbledygook. And even within this movie, there was a path that we were going down where we see photographs of what look like the clown as a human, and then it never went anywhere. And so I just ended up feeling like it was a big fat middle of a donut. There was nothing there. I think the thrills and the tropes and the jumps were good, but like you said, I almost wanted it to be scarier. It was good production. I think the acting was good. But I remember just feeling during that last hour, God, this is dragging on, because the whole last hour is just a big chase. And I feel like they compromised the storytelling to get us through that kind of action. And yeah. I was shocked that we were there for 3 hours.
I couldn't put it together. That was my biggest frustration, was it there was all this stuff happening, but I couldn't connect the dots. And so it just ended up feeling frustrating because an exploration of some of the themes, you know. And I had to kind of remember, as opposed to being reminded of the events of the first movie. Now, you know, sometimes that's a direct choice, right? The idea is that ultimately they want to put them together back to back and we shouldn't have to recap everything. But I had to kind of remember, oh, right, okay, so the it thing, it's not just the clown. It's not the it thing is, you know, the thing that scares them most. The it thing is some manifestation of, but the story wasn't there for me to kind of enjoy in the moment, right?
So yeah,
the whole experience ended up being frustrating
because we
jumped from scene to scene to scene, and I couldn't put it together. And maybe that's my own, you know, lack of familiarity with the knowledge, or maybe it's the problem with the movie. But I sat there frustrated.
I almost felt like somebody just said, "Yeah, this is a great franchise. Now it will take a ton of money and make sure that the sequel makes, you know, a gazillion dollars," because it felt like a Marvel movie. It was very polished. Mm. It's very
scale.
It's very big in scale. Like it's one set piece after another. I'm not giving anything away, but when the older versions get together, they decide that one way to deal with Pennywise is that each of them goes separately and kind of deal with their inner demons related to Pennywise, which allows for a series of, you know, set pieces for each of these characters. And so it kind of plays like almost like a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it's a great point.
But that's not what this movie's about. And the movie's already made a ton over the weekend. It's made like 95 million or so. So clearly they took the right commercial path, but
I feel,
it could have been more. Either it could have been genuinely scary in trying to make us understand how this person still has a hold on these people. Or it could have been deliciously weird. Like there is a great scene in this movie which happens very early on when all the older characters meet first, and it's in a Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, that was a great scene.
And things just go weird. I mean, it was like, I'm like, what the hell's going on? And it was weird enough that it started to get creepy to me. And, you know, I wish the rest of the movie was as weird, where it was just constantly shocking you, like, what the hell's going on? Or the other thing is, I think actually the most effective scene in the entire movie is the one that opens the movie. And it has to do with a hate crime which happens. And that was truly scary to me because, you know, it kind of is so real. It's something which can be happening right now.
But
and
it
it's probably
no
happening
relevance.
Every day, right?
It has no relevance to the rest of the movie.
Correct.
In
so
a
if
sense.
They had made it more relevant to everyday hate crimes, everyday things that are happening right now, then that would have been another path to go to steep it more in current events. But then that doesn't go anywhere either.
So we didn't seem to come back to that at all.
No.
So
one scene, one little throwback. Here's the thing. I think it's tonally inconsistent. It feels like it was a came of age story, right? So they were all young in the first one. They're adults now and we're kind of seeing their life retrospectively. So they came of age. But I can't help but feel it's more of a love triangle romance than a bona fide horror. And I wanted bona fide horror because the first one was so good and so effective. And so this to me actually feels more like a dark comedy at times. Actually, there were more laughs because there were some genuinely funny pieces and not in anticipation of the horror, which you often get in a movie theater.
Not a nervous laughter.
Yeah, less of the nervous laughter, but actually a lot of the comedy came because Bill Hader did such a great performance.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
So Bill Hader steals the movie.
To me,
he's
correct.
So good.
He to me felt like such the right casting.
Mm-hmm.
And then there just seemed this weird gender stuff going on. Like a lot of the LGBTQ type stuff. Like many of them are grappling with their sexuality. I didn't understand it. Just I'm rambling because I think I'm confused. And I think that's the failing of the movie. That's where the disappointment is. The one thing I'll say in its favor is it has superb editing.
Yes.
The editing is incredible in this movie. How it switches from old to young and then certain scenes kind of meld into another, that was exceptional.
So if I have to say good things about the movie, it's the transitions. They're impeccable. Like somebody's eating a popcorn and the popcorn becomes stars and then you go back to the old. I mean, I'm just giving an example. I don't remember in my mind exactly, but the transitions between one scene to the other, especially in the first half of the movie, is really very good. And I think the movie does a lot of back and forth with the younger characters versus the older characters. And those are all brilliantly. They fit in like with a nice, pleasing click. Those are all very well done together.
Yeah.
And I think there's a lot of, again, I haven't read the book, but there's a lot of reliance on the younger characters. The movie spends almost as much time with them. And I think they were all teenagers when they made the previous movie. So I'm not sure, but I think these actors have been de-aged, the younger actors, to look like how they did 2 years ago. So there's some weirdness with their faces as well that I noticed. But I like that. I also like that the movie had a couple good cameos, which I don't want to give away.
Yes.
There's one with a very famous writer. There's one with a very famous director.
Yes.
So that I liked. I think from a craft perspective, the movie is very good. The monsters, the creature features are kind of...
They're kind of like puppets.
They're puppets. I mean, they're. I don't know. I think they made an R-rated movie for the PG-13 crowd. So they wanted more people to see it without really scaring them. I don't know what the deal was, but...
Yeah. If Yazdi and I are saying we want more scare, there's something wrong with this movie, right? Let's be honest.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And then I think considering how much baggage each of these older characters carries, right? Everybody has some backstory to them. Why the need then to go into the origin story of Pennywise? And there's all this gobbledygook about aliens. I mean, there was some weird stuff about, there were like face huggers in the movie. And I'm like, what's going on? This is like, why are you borrowing from aliens of anything? So anyway.
But I think that might be the source material. And I think that I kind of wanted a better explanation of that, right? I mean,
well, you did, okay.
Stevens, because again, I mean, there is all of this stuff happening in Derry. And you kind of want to know why Derry and how this come to pass.
Right. So, and why a clown? And what's the connection with the photo on the wall?
And that's my point.
And the old woman and the house. Yeah.
Why are those elements kind of alluded to but not explored? They're kind of just thrown in. So, I mean, seeing as I'm talking, I may as well just give you my score. I mean, for me, it's a 6 out of 10. It's absolutely passable entertainment. And unlike you, Rashmi, I mean, I didn't think this dragged at all. I thought the movie zinged along. With wonderful entertainment. It just was a frustrating experience in part because because part one was so special, that, you know, not getting the same level of film craft here that I think we got in that first one is what lets it down. So 6 out of 10 from me.
Yes, Dee.
Yeah, 6 out of 10 for me as well. Unlike you, my last, and I have like 4 pages of notes, but the last thing I wrote is end movie, end already.
Oh, wow.
I was like, the movie has like 3 or 4 endings. It's like, you know, proper thing then happens, then there's a postscript, then there's a post-postscript, then a post-post-postscript. And, you know, I think the only possible way this movie can be called a scary movie is that these particular characters act in really stupid ways like people in horror movies do. Particularly towards the end, right? There's a
they
whole bunch
go into
of them.
The cellar.
They go into the cellar in the middle of the night, then they go down a sewer, then they go down this chasm. It's like, can't you wait? Can't you bring other people with you? Can't you wait till the morning? You know, but no, they do all these stupid things. It sounds like I'm pooping on it. It's a very enjoyable movie. I will not I will not deny it. I did close my eyes a couple of times. Maybe that's why I don't find it a little bit scary. But even then, I think the scariness is limited to jump scares. And it's not truly like something which gets into your, you know, into the middle of your heart and won't leave, you know, like clasps your heart. So there is no psychological terror here, which is where this movie should have gone. So yeah, a generous 6 out of 10 for me as well. 5.5 up to 6.
Rashmi.
It's okay. 6 out of 10.
I thought you were going to be it number 2, instead of it chapter 2. Okay, 3 sixes, I guess. Oh, that's scary.
Ooh.
6, 6, 6. I changed my score to 7. No.
All right. Okay, moving on. Brittany runs a marathon. So, Yazdi, I think you're going to tell us about Brittany Runs a Marathon.
Yes. So, Brittany Runs a Marathon is by writer-director Paul Downs-Collazzo. I believe this is his first feature film, and it's based on a friend of his who this script and this movie is modeled after. And essentially, Brittany Runs a Marathon is the story of a young woman in New York City who spends a lot of her time partying and generally being lost. And she's by no means overweight, but she has a few extra pounds. And we all do. And she's told by her doctor that she should probably, you know, lose some weight in order to better herself. So she decides to make positive changes in her life by training for the New York City Marathon. And it's about how things play out. The movie is, as I mentioned, written and directed by Paul Downs Collazzo. And it stars Jillian Bell in the title role. And for those of you who don't remember Jillian Bell, she was in the 22 Jump Street. She was really funny. She almost stole that movie. She's in that.
Yes.
And then the cast is rounded out by Michaela Watkins, who plays her upstairs tenant and landlord. And we don't nearly see her in movies a lot. She's in a lot of sitcoms, actually. And then the other lead role is by Lil Rel Howery, who plays her brother-in-law. And we last saw him in Jordan Peele's first movie, Get Out. And then Micah Stock plays the other character who kind of starts to run with him. And Utkarsh Ambodkar, an Indian-American actor, is also here playing potential love interest for Jillian Bell. So this movie is a very small movie, no big-name actors, but it got very good feedback at Sundance and other film festivals. So Fox Searchlight picked it up and it's now releasing it. Were they right to sink their money in bringing this movie to the theaters?
This is a well-directed, well-acted, and overall gem of a movie. Nothing we haven't seen before, but the execution overall of this is something really special. And I think that's mainly because Jillian Bell, who plays Brittany, like you just said, Yazdi, is so well cast. This doesn't feel like a different planet again to Amy Schumer's I Feel Pretty, but it's far more superior, and it captures my perception of today's youth and the fears they face as they approach their 30s so well. I love this movie.
Joe?
I like this movie too. I mean, I think it has, I don't know whether it's true or not, but it has a very improvisational feel to it. I think a lot of the humor that, and maybe it's just, you know, the performance here by Jillian Bell feels so, so natural. She inhabits that role so believably that I felt that it was almost, reality is the wrong word, but, you know, they pointed a camera at them and said, right, you know, here's what this scene's about, go do. So it has that very kind of loose, airy feel to it. It feels, you know, and it feels like a small movie. I think the main issue is, and again, I think maybe it's an intentional thing, but I did find Brittany kind of hard to like at times. That I think was intended. But as a result of that, I found myself, you know, not quite drawn into the world of the movie, and I didn't find myself, you know, caring quite as much about her predicament as I should. You know, I kind of felt, you know what, you need to, you know, deal with your stuff. So it was annoying because
it's very judgmental.
That's the point I'm trying to make here. I normally find myself, you know, kind of wanting to get behind these characters and see, you know,
pull your socks up, get your life together.
You can do it. And honestly, at the end of it, I was just thinking, well, you know, if she makes it, she makes it. You know, that's I know, right? harsh criticism.
That's an Uncle Joe statement, I think.
Yes. But it's a charming little movie, and I did enjoy it.
Yazdi.
So I'm with you, Rashmi. I really, really like this movie. And for me, always a good sign of a movie is, you know, we take our books with us when we go for the previews. I have just one line on my in my review. Sometimes it's a blank. If it's a really good movie, it's a blank because I'm so...
I agree with you. I've got the same.
I'm so connected with the movie, I forget to take notes. I'm so in the movie that I forget that... You know, I'm meant to take notes or not write things down. So a few things about the movie. I think, number one, in the current climate, it's kind of, you got to be very careful because you don't want to imply that anybody who has very big is purposeless and that if they just lost their weight, their life would be perfect. And so the movie has to kind of, to its great credit, it does not start with a character who is overly large. I mean, she might have a few extra pounds, but she's not like obese or anything. So I think it's the movie's credit.
And she's certainly not unattractive.
No, and she's very, exactly. She's very attractive.
She's not like the ugly duckling.
Correct. And then the movie, you know, there's the doctor character who also says, you know, some people who have thyroid problems or other issues or genetic problems, they might have a lot of difficulty losing weight. So the movie, I think, makes it very clear to point that they're not suggesting that just losing weight is the answer to all of your life's problems, which I think, you know, is the mature way to do it, because otherwise it could get accused of, you know, oversimplifying this. The other thing I really liked about the movie is that the title of the movie tells you that Brittany runs a marathon. So you would think that this would be a movie about a person who just gets her act together, starts running, runs a marathon, and life is better. But that's not all the movie is about. The movie is so much more than that, because actually the second part of the movie is not about her physical betterment, but it's about her taking emotional accountability for her life. She, like you said, she's not the most likable character. She's a very closed off person. Mm-hmm. I actually found her more endearing. I found her more human because she behaves really badly on multiple occasions. And that's reality. We are all very complicated individuals. And she has to figure out how she's going to let people into her life, how she's going to allow, because that's what's stunting her right now. And it's about her kind of taking inventory of not just her physical betterment, but also her emotional betterment. So I sound like a Hallmark card, but I really like that part, that there's more depth to the movie
than
that. You
sound like nice Uncle Yazdi compared to mean Uncle Joe.
Yeah, and thank you. I completely see Joe's point. I mean, she's a character who very actively shuns help from people, and you know, she kind of really lashes out to people when she doesn't need to. But I think it's because of the world seeing her in a particular way, you know, through most of her life. So I'm rambling, but I like that it genuinely seemed to be inspiring to me. At the end, wherever she lands, I believe that it's hard won. And I think that's a testament to the writing, to the complexity of it, to how well it's directed, and also to Gillian Bell.
Yeah, I think here's a classic movie about someone who is their own worst enemy. Mm-hmm. And we identify with the character because we all know people like this in our real lives. So I think it's a universal story of sorts, whatever age you are, whatever gender you are. And it's just very relatable. Either you're the Britney character or you know someone very close to you who's like the Britney character. And I think the mastery of this one is that it didn't feel predictable. Mm-hmm. And even when it did right towards the end, it didn't matter because the journey of the character was just very authentic.
Yeah.
So I can sum this one up. Joe, I'll add to, I had also feels very small in production, feels very small. It felt very film festival-esque. Mm-hmm. But I think this one will break the mainstream, you know, because it's very appealing. So I'll just say, you know, look, this one keeps your attention right through to the finish line. I'm going to give this one an 8 out of 10. And I think maybe as the year goes on, I would think of this as a 9, but for now, it's an 8 out of 10 for me.
Yeah, this is an 8.5 out of 10 for me, which I'm going to back down to an 8. And like you, maybe as the year goes on, it'll grow in my esteem. I think it's very hard to do a movie, you know, and avoid cliches and avoid, you know, like, oh yeah, finally this person finds self-empowerment and makes her life better. And I think the movie kind of recognizes that that's a hurdle to telling this story, and rightly so, makes it more grounded and more complex and more realistic. We never talked about the two other characters. The one character is her.
Well, the other three.
The other three characters, yeah. Yes. You know, her sister and her brother-in-law who mean really well. Her upstairs tenant, who she dislikes, but the tenant really means so well for her and kind of gets her started. And then this other friend of hers, a genuine friend of hers, who she meets while she's running the first time in Central Park. And again, those characters feel real to me, and it kind of gave me a sense of finding your true family in life, you know, and being grateful for them and not necessarily shunning them and finally learning your lessons and so forth. So at the end of the day, it felt authentic to me. So 8 out of 10. There is nobody I would not recommend this movie to.
Yeah. And Joe. I, despite my somewhat harsh comments earlier on, I mean, I did like this movie. I think the comedy in it works. The comedy performance in it works. She's very, very funny, I think, comedic timing wise, and just her overall delivery of lines to me has just undertones of, you know, the believability that we saw with Kristen Wiig's performance in Bridesmaids.
Yes.
Right, there's just a way that she,
yes,
there's just a way that she is where you kind of
evolves,
like,
right?
Yeah, so you know, I like this movie a lot, so it gets a 7 from me. You know, it's a fun, very small little movie. I mean, it really does feel like a film school project plus, and I don't want that to make it to sound unappealing. I feel like somebody's really put their heart into doing this, and it's kind of slight roughness around the edges brings it a certain charm.
Brittany won the race.
Yes.
Okay.
Good for Gillian Bell. Yes.
Indeed. Yeah. I look forward to seeing more of her. I think she's kind of a more likable version of the kind of characters that Amy Schumer plays.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because Amy Schumer has a certain abrasiveness.
Yeah. An acidity, I say.
And, you know, here she replaces that with a sweetness. She's not always likable, but it's definitely there. Okay. Let us know what you think of these movies, of our Netflix choices, of our fashion choices. If you check us out on Instagram, there's occasional a picture of us in it. Twitter.com/moviewallers.
You're really enjoying that air circulating around your nether regions.
Mail@moviewallers.com, Facebook, Instagram, all of the above. So until our next podcast.
And watch out in our next podcast for reviews of potentially Ad Astra, Hustlers, and
There's some really good stuff coming up. So it is getting to that time of year where
three a week.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. I mean, you threw those in there yesterday. I'm really looking forward to Joker. So, hopefully that will.
I'm interested to see Ad Astra.
Me too.
Yeah. Okay. Until next time. Too many movies, too little time, and goodbye from me.
And me.
And me as well.